It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Human papillomavirus, or HPV, is one of the most common sexually transmitted diseases in the country. We're going to spend most, if not all, of our program today discussing HPV and the HPV vaccine. Much of the discussion will involve sensitive topics. Listener discretion is advised. Two of the strains of HPV account for about 70% of all cervical cancers, as well as cancer to the vagina. Men can develop genital warts and cancer of the penis. The HPV vaccine has been recommended for both girls and boys ages 9 to 26. Again, that's for both girls and boys ages 9 to 26. But a recent report from the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention claims not enough parents are getting their children vaccinated. I'm joined now in Studio A by Dr. Jonathan Pletcher, Clinical Director for the Division of Adolescent Medicine at Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. Dr. Pletcher, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Paul. It's good to be here.
And if you would like to join the conversation, call us with your comments or questions at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. If you are a parent, tell us why you have had your son or daughter vaccinated. And if not, what are the reservations and concerns you have about getting your child vaccinated? 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Dr. Pletcher, why don't we begin by having you explain what human papillomavirus is?
Sure, Paul. The human papillomavirus is it's a virus that lives in human skin cells, and it is spread primarily through skin-to-skin contact, so from direct contact from one person to another. And it primarily affects the basal layer of cells and can, depending on the strain, result in a number of different pathologies.
So fortunately, there is a vaccine. What does it do, and how is it administered?
That's right. So the vaccine is an intramuscular injection. It's a series of three injections over 6 months, it delivers parts of the virus, kind of replicas of the parts of the virus, to kind of inform the immune system of a young person, so that if that person comes in contact with those strains of the virus, their immune system will be able to detect it and keep that person from developing a chronic long-term infection and developing the consequences such as warts or cancers that you mentioned.
And what age groups should be vaccinated? I mentioned it earlier, but it bears repeating.
That's right. It does bear repeating because it's very important to try to get the vaccine early, before a person would be at risk for coming into contact, or when most people are at risk for coming in contact with the virus. And also getting somebody, an individual, when their immune system is rapidly developing is important as well. So that's why the shot is recommended for younger teens starting at age 11. Extends up to age 26, but we really promote it for adolescents primarily.
So we have a disease, or we have a virus, we have a vaccination for that virus, mm-hmm. and yet the HPV vaccine is surrounded by controversy. Why is that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You raise a terrific question, and people have been debating this in different realms around the country for a while. That's right. The links are complete. And we also now have increasing evidence from a recent report that the vaccine, if you compare in a longitudinal study, the pre-vaccine era to the post-vaccine era, so the few years before 2006 and a few years after in a cohort of young women, we now see that with vaccination, the rates of cervical cancer have dropped. And so the links are complete. And so that's right. There are many reasons why people may be resistant or suspicious. A new vaccine, certainly. One that is unproven has been raised. One that hasn't been out long enough, so people don't know all the side effects. People certainly raise those. And I think those are kind of standard areas for all vaccines or new interventions. But there's also the piece of that the HPV is primarily acquired through skin-to-skin contact. And for most of us, that's through sexual contact, usually typically in the later adolescent years and early 20s, most research tells us. And so I think that the mind immediately going from HPV to sex in the context of a teenager, particularly a younger teenager, raises certain questions for parents.
The CDC report claims that the HPV vaccine is underutilized. And even if there were concerns, say, for example, from a parent who thought that by getting this vaccine for their child that they would be promoting in some way promiscuity sexual activity, when you consider what this vaccine is capable, think, of preventing, it would seem to still be a no-brainer to get it, and yet people don't. And is there another reason to explain the reluctance?
I don't know that that's everybody, but I do think there's a perspective of granting some permission. We're giving you some protection, therefore we're permitting you to have this activity. And I think this speaks to the certainly vaccines come up usually in the exam room. A parent and a teenager and a healthcare provider are discussing this. And if these aren't discussions that are natural and things that are expected in the exam room, there may be some surprise or reluctance on the parent. So I think it's very important, even before talking about the vaccine, setting some kind of framework as a child enters into adolescence, some kind of framework with the parents about what the role of the healthcare provider can be. As that teenager develops into a young adult, develops a sexuality, part of their identity, and so on. And that makes it easy to separate. And so you can say to the parent, well, that's not this discussion. We can have that discussion separately. This is about a vaccine that's important to get, and this is why to prevent cancer. And we can have those other discussions and separately.
One of the things that I've read is that some parents just simply don't want to acknowledge even the idea that their teenage son or daughter might be sexually active. What is the reality that some parents might need to confront there?
Yeah, that's right. In preparation for the show today, I confirmed with my son, who's a teenager, that will never happen. As parents.
And are you convinced that it won't?
That's right. Absolutely not. So I think all parents want to believe that, and all parents do their best. And part of doing their best is finding partners to promote those value systems for their teenagers. And I think those are very important discussions to have. And I feel it an honor to be a part of those discussions when families allow me to participate. But the fact is the fact, the issue can come up also that, I know I'm not going to have sex until I'm married, so I'm not at risk for this, but you don't know who your partner is going to be. Are they going to have those same commitments and so on? There are certainly lots of ways to think about it outside of the individual, if you want to have that discussion. But again, I think that's outside of the context of the shot and its value and so on.
We're talking about one of the most commonly sexually transmitted diseases in the country, human papillomavirus, or HPV. And we're spending a good deal of our program today discussing HPV and the HPV vaccine, which has generated no small amount of controversy. If you would like to weigh in on the conversation, have a comment or a question for our guest, Dr. Jonathan Pletcher, Clinical Director for the Division of Adolescent Medicine at Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. We posted this question for parents via the WESA Facebook page. Have you had a child receive the HPV vaccine? If so, what convinced you? And we received these responses. The first is from Therese, and she says, yes, my daughter had the 3-dose HPV vaccination at 13 years of age, or maybe 12. Our reasons were twofold. First and foremost, we believe the benefits of vaccinations in general outweigh the risks and limitations. This HPV vaccination covers only a portion of the HPVs. Also, I knew of two women who are close to us, a 20-year-old and a 50-year-old, that had recent encounters with HPV cancerous cells. I agree that if I had a son, we'd be doing the same for him. The second response came from Eric, who says, not yet. But the fact that a simple vaccine against a relatively common virus can pretty much prevent a common cancer is all the reason I need to talk to my girl's doctor about it. If I had a boy, he'd be getting it too. No need to spread HPV around. So those are a couple of responses from parents who support the idea of getting the virus. As far as those who do not, Is there a segment of the population, Dr. Pletcher, in Pennsylvania that is anti-vaccine and therefore might be driving some of this anti-vaccine sentiment?
Mm-hmm. I think there are a number of interest groups that I think are very active in discussing this and making sure that when a vaccine is recommended by a school system, for example, or by a statute, for example, by the Department of Health or so on, that all the viewpoints are heard. And I think there certainly is a dynamic here where it's parent choice over what the recommendation and what the doctor says is best or what the science says is best. And that's a discussion to be had, I think, at individual levels. So, I have seen some of those dynamics play out over time, as this particularly how this vaccine has been rolling out.
Is there misinformation about the vaccine?
I think there are many examples over the last couple of years, some at the national level, of misinformation being out there.
And it's being spread by whom?
Sometimes people with political aims or political aspirations or people looking to attract viewers, I guess, to a particular show, things like that. And I think that the lack of information, or I guess the misinformation that's going out is that there's not enough information that this works, or there's not enough information about the side effects out there.
And you're saying that's not true.
I am. I'm saying that I think there is plenty of evidence over the last 5 to 6 years, over millions of individuals getting the shots, that it's safe and that it is effective, and that the benefits to individuals as well as to communities, as well as to us as a country, is going to be felt, and so it's important to think about those things.
412-246-2002. If you have a comment or a question for our guest, Dr. Jonathan Pletcher. Again, he is clinical director for the Division of Adolescent Medicine at Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. Let's go to Mark in Mount Lebanon. Mark, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Dr. Pletcher, for being on. I have an oddball question, I guess, in that we did go through the regimen with my daughter and wanted to make sure we did the same with our son. Unfortunately, we had a circumstance in the middle of that regimen that we lost records. We had we've moved and in some transition are really not sure if we finished his inoculations, the series of three. So our best guess is that we haven't completed them within that six-month time frame. So what is the procedure from that? We definitely want to make sure he is protected. We'd like to move forward, but we're unsure as to what the right way to do that is.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. That's a really common situation. These records are hard to keep. The recommendation, and I typically advocate for completing the three-shot series, even if it's outside of that recommended, get it at time zero and then in 2 months and then 6 months later. And there is evidence to show that boosters, even after the 6 months, can have a response, although it's not as great as the response is at the recommended schedule. So I would say to complete it, to get the three shots. I know probably several individuals who've come back and said they found the records and I ended up getting four shots. And I don't think that leads to any adverse side effects either. So if there's one extra shot, I would err on the side of making sure there are three shots.
Hopefully that clears it up for you, Mark. And again, that was Mark in Mount Lebanon, and I suppose that's a common concern for parents when they're moving. You know, records get lost, you lose track of appointments, especially when this is administered in with three visits, or some at least multiple visits, and sometimes as many as three.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're used to hearing about HPV associated with young women, but you say boys should get vaccinated too.
Oh yes, absolutely, absolutely. There are several reasons for that. I mean, the benefits to the individual in terms of protection from penile cancer as well as from two of the strains of HPV also that cause warts are really terrific. So it's for teens, particularly early in high school or before they go off to college, for boys to get those shots as well as girls is very important. But also in terms of them not acquiring it, they're potentially protecting future partners and other people and exponentially out from there. And that's often referred to as herd immunity. And so the more folks that are vaccinated within a group of individuals, the less overall prevalence of the disease we're going to see.
And forgive me if you have already clarified this, but when you are vaccinated, let's say you're vaccinated as in early teens, let's say 14, mm-hmm. and we've already established the age parameters is between 9 and 26. So let's say that you get the vaccine, you're 14, and how long is it good for? A lot of these last 10 years, what would be the case here?
That's interesting. I think we will see some of that more research come out. I mean, it's really been widely available now, I think, going on 6 or 7 years. And so we'll begin to see that. And I know there are cohorts that have been followed before that, mostly from cohorts in Western European countries that are going to be following, and they're looking at that. So far, they haven't recommended or felt the need to recommend a booster shot.
Hmm. So we really don't know at this point. We're only going back to, what, 2006 or so, seven?
Yeah, that's right. But you're also talking about life course issues as well, is that there are other times in life that we do see a little bump in the increase of sexually transmitted infections or HPV, and sometimes that's around the time of midlife crisis. And so due to that, they may recommend, eventually look at those epidemiologic patterns, may recommend a booster for other reasons as well, as to boost immunity, but also because you're at heightened risk because of behavior change that mm-hmm. continues to occur.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Maggie from Washington, PA, I believe. Maggie, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi. I've been listening to the doctor, and I think there are a couple things that have not been brought up yet, and I'd like to share my personal experience.
Please do.
My son in his 40s developed cancer of the tonsils. He had not had his tonsils removed. And they were, of course, removed at that time, and it was considered to be HPV 16 that had caused this cancer. Now, we were told that this virus lays dormant for 20 years. So in his 40s, we assume oral sex causation resulted in this cancer of the tonsils. Now, I'm wondering if the doctor is concerned about this, and this goes to the question of, should there be a booster for people who are, you know, past 26? So I'll leave it at that and ask the doctor to respond.
Well, that's a very relevant question, Maggie. And Dr. Pletcher, what would be your response to Maggie's concerns?
Maggie, that you really raised some really, really terrific issues that I think there's a lot of research going on, and I think we don't know the answers to a lot of the questions that you pose. I mean, certainly there is a link, as you mentioned, with other types of cancer, particularly of the throat with HPV in these high-risk subtypes. I don't believe the studies have been done linking protection with cancer of the throat or pharynx with the HPV vaccines, but those likely are happening. But yeah, certainly it goes, you touched on a couple different things about exposure and really what is the natural course of the HPV and how does it cause cancer? And this is where sometimes other risk factors may come into play, re-exposure may come into play. And again, we're only beginning to understand some of these things. One example of that, I think, applying it to a different kind of infections, cancer of the cervix, is thinking about the pap smear schedules and the American Cancer Society and the American College of OBGYN have really changed their recommendations and recommended pap smear screening begin at 21. And the reason for that is that the exposures that we were detecting before 21 really didn't directly prevent any cervical cancer. That typically teenagers, people less than 21 who had a abnormal pap smear, would typically turn to normal pap smears eventually if you follow them over time. And it wasn't until it reactivated or they were re-exposed in their 30s, and again, other risk factors might come into play, that they would then become having cervical cancer. So we are beginning to understand more and more of the science and the pathophysiology of HPV infection and all the steps involved to go from there to cancer. But you do raise some important issues, and I know there's a lot of work going on in that area.
And along the lines of what Maggie mentioned there in that last call, recently we
became aware of actor Michael Douglas's struggles with cancer, and it was reported by the UK's The Guardian newspaper that his throat cancer was caused by, or at least this is what Michael Douglas reportedly told The Guardian, was that his throat cancer was caused by an infection from performing oral sex on a woman. The doctors who treated him seemed to think it more likely that his cancer came from a combination of smoking, drinking, and infection. So there can be a combination of factors.
And I believe his father as well had a similar cancer. And so genetics may also play a role there. So that's right. You speak to risk factors, and there are certainly factors that can accelerate someone's course to cancer. But the key ingredient, the cause, I guess, is exposure to the HPV and infection with HPV. So if we can kind of prevent that link, it helps. But certainly, again, right, other lifestyle factors come into play.
We're talking about the human papillomavirus, or HPV, and the HPV vaccine. Taking your calls and questions at 412-246-2002 with Dr. Jonathan Pletcher, Clinical Director for the Division of Adolescent Medicine at Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. We're interested in hearing your comments and questions about HPV and the HPV vaccine and why you've had your son or daughter vaccinated. And if not, why not? At 412-246-2002, we'll continue the discussion. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking about the human papillomavirus, or HPV, one of the most common sexually transmitted diseases in the country, spending a good deal of our show on this topic today, discussing HPV and the HPV vaccine. And again, much of our discussion is involving sensitive topics. Listener discretion is advised. Our guest is Dr. Jonathan Pletcher. He's the clinical director for the Division of Adolescent Medicine at Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh, with us here in Studio A. If you have comments or questions for him, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. We have this email from Dawn, who has this question for Dr. Pletcher. My son is due for his third HPV vaccine next week. I've been wavering because I read that two shots may be as effective as three. Any thoughts, Dr. Pletcher?
That's a great question. I can easily see how that conclusion could be drawn. I think the media reports and the research I've seen is that two shots are better than most folks expected, but they are not as good as the three shots. The three shots, if given on schedule and before exposure to the virus, are 100% effective in preventing cancers caused by the two high-risk subtypes.
Are there any legitimate risks that are associated with the vaccine?
Well, I think certainly anybody, any individual who's had an allergic reaction or any serious reaction to any vaccine certainly should be discussing that with their healthcare provider. People who have known to have an allergy to a component of vaccines certainly shouldn't get it, including people with strong allergies to yeast. It's certainly not recommended for women who are pregnant. But I'm not aware of any adverse events there. Relating to people who may be ill with a flu or a virus or things like that, I mean, I think I've experienced administering the vaccine with many people with mild illness. When they get a little sicker, certainly people who have a chronic illness, sometimes it can be delayed or deferred depending on how severe the illness is. But other than that, those are the main things that we think about, and otherwise it's been very well tolerated.
Is there any difference of opinion among pediatricians about how often this should be the HPV virus should be administered?
I do think there is. I mean, I think certainly over time, just as in the general public amongst pediatricians, It has certainly become a lot more accepted. And with acceptance, people talk about it with more confidence. And certainly the American Academy of Pediatrics and research has been shown that the confidence of the pediatrician recommended is directly related to acceptance and uptake of the vaccine. But there continues to be pediatricians and groups of organized groups of pediatricians who put out statements that are kind of lukewarm or may again, say, the research is still out when, in fact, the research is in. So I think it's important for parents to be informed as well, and for individuals, for teenagers to be informed about this as well.
So you may want to get a second opinion in some cases.
Yeah, I think so. Everybody's healthcare is their own responsibility ultimately. And when you're a teenager, you're transitioning, right? You're that responsibility is going from your parents, and you're learning how to assume that. And so judging the perspective of people you're getting advice about your health is really important. I always strongly encourage people who have any doubts or question where I'm coming from to get a second opinion and to think about these things.
How much of an issue is insurance coverage with this?
Mm-hmm. It's really not a huge issue these days. I mean, when the vaccine first rolled out, it wasn't always on, especially certain like employer-based plans on their menu of options. I think the series of three shots is around $360 plus vaccine administration fees. So it isn't cheap. But now I have not known that to be an issue for anybody.
412-246-2002, if you'd like to join the conversation with Dr. Jonathan Pletcher, Clinical Director for the Division of Adolescent Medicine at Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh, talking about HPV and the HPV virus, the HPV vaccine. And let's go to Keith in Waynesburg. Keith, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. I just wanted to kind of chime in. My wife was diagnosed this last January with a cancer in the right side of her neck, and she went through extensive surgery, removing three lymph nodes, her internal jugular vein, it affected a nerve, and they also took her tonsils. But essentially, the final result was that they've said that it was caused by HPV, and she had to have 30 radiation treatments, 6 chemo treatments, and it was pretty extensive, and it's really been nasty. And I want to encourage people to get their kids vaccinated because it causes immense trouble.
Well, Keith, how is your wife doing?
She's doing very well. The prognosis is excellent. The oncologist in charge of the case said that because it was caused by HPV, there's a 90% plus chance that she'll be cancer-free. And they caught it in plenty of time, so the prognosis is good, but it's going to take months for her to come out of this and feel normal again.
Hmm. Well, our thoughts and well wishes go out to you and to her. And doctor, what about with what Keith is sharing with us here?
That's an amazing story, and I'm in awe of Keith and Maggie called early, who are willing to put out really touching personal stories. And I really think in an effort to say these are horrible diseases, and there aren't as prevalent, so it's not as likely that you're going to know somebody who has these terrible diseases. In particular, cervical cancer, which if you look at the statistics, was much, much more prevalent 40 or 50 years ago before Pap screening became a national effort. And for women who didn't benefit from Pap screening, it continues to be a horrible disease. And because because of our successes in screening and preventing, people aren't as familiar. These are really, really horrible diseases. And this vaccine offers some real hope that we can have an impact of preventing cancer for the first time in our history. So,
412-246-2002. Let's go to Alfred in Cheswick. Alfred, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Hey. Yeah, I have a daughter who's going to turn 12. I was just about ready to get her vaccinated. And while she was in the office, I was reading some horror stories of adverse effects of people that did have their children vaccinated. So I was reading there was well over 1,000 significant cases. At least those are the ones that were reported. So, is the doctor aware of any of these specific cases? And, can he describe them? Because, pretty much the ones I read about, they were you know, they were affected for life. I mean, one of the cautions on the vaccine is that you should sit for 15 minutes after taking it for the potential of fainting. I mean, what's that all about?
Well, yeah, Alfred, you raised some very important issues. And again, one of the questions that comes up is, does this shot have side effects?
Yeah, Alfred, that is right. There are there are side effects, and certainly the side effects are mostly short term and can be ameliorated by what you mentioned, by having the teenager kind of stay seated for about 15 minutes or so. And really, the reason for that is the shot hurts. And anytime you're getting a shot, your anxiety goes up a little bit. And teenagers already are at risk for what we call orthostatic hypotension, or they stand up too fast, gravity pulls their blood down, and they get a little lightheaded. When you combine all those ingredients in the exam room, teenagers certainly, especially taller ones, would stand up quickly after getting the shot and could faint, certainly. And after you faint, you might have a few myoclonic jerks, things like that, that look like seizures. And those are things that we've talked about. Those are things that we've seen. I don't know how many. I'm not familiar with each case that's been reported. I know the FDA has a reporting system. I'm familiar with that. And I know they look very carefully at every severe event. But certainly when it's happened where somebody's fainted, we report that. That's a severe event. And I haven't known anybody to have any further sequelae than that, other than to learn that they're at risk for fainting and how to prevent that.
Are there additional benefits to the HPV vaccine?
Additional benefits aside from preventing cancer.
Right.
Preventing the genital warts.
Does it do, say, more for the immune system?
I don't think there's evidence to speak to that. I mean, people have certainly looked at and thought about can these, you know, the vaccine, there are two vaccines that are out right now. One is bivalent and one is quadrivalent. So one protects against two subtypes that are high risk for cancer, and one protects against two for cancer and two that cause genital warts. I don't think there's great evidence to say that it cross-reacts into other vaccine types, other virus subtypes. But that, I think that will be forthcoming as well.
We were talking earlier about insurance coverage, and as we see more and more of the provisions of the Affordable Care Act kicking in, how, if at all, does that impact the coverage issue with regard to the HPV vaccine? The availability, the affordability, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, Paul, that's also a great thing to talk about. I think the Affordable Care Act certainly has already had the impact and is continuing to impact particularly emerging young adults, those youth 18 to 26 years old, by improving access to health care in a number of different ways, by maintaining them on their parents' insurance, opening up other programs. And so vaccination is key, that the number of diseases that can be prevented that young adults 18 to 26 are at risk for, including this one and many other. There are vaccines that are important for young adults to get, including boosters for meningitis. But if you haven't gotten the HPV shot, again, this is recommended up to age 26. That is a very key time. Even if you may have been exposed to one or more of the subtypes, there still is a positive benefit to this, getting these shots.
We're discussing the human papillomavirus, or HPV, with Dr. Jonathan Pletcher, clinical director for the Division of Adolescent Medicine at Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. And certainly there is much to discuss about HPV and the HPV vaccine. If you have a comment or question, would like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002, the number to call, 412-246-2002, our email address, essphgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Let's welcome in Sonia from Washington. Sonia, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, hello. Thank you for inviting me. I had my daughter vaccinated at the very early age of 8, as soon as the vaccination first came out and she was legal to do so. And the reason why is because cancer runs in my family. And I figured if there's any possible way to help prevent a child from, you know, getting something, I'm all about it. But do you know if they will ever raise the age limit, the ceiling of 26, to an older person?
Interesting question.
Yeah, Sonia, that is a great question. And you raised another good point as well, is that the shot, the immunization, is approved for I believe as young as 9 by the FDA, but recommended at age 11. But I think it certainly is possible to get it at a younger age if there are other risk factors. Yes, I do believe there's work thinking about this vaccine, again, how it may apply across the life course. Because that's right, the exposure during your 20s may result in disease in your 30s and 40s, and it may afford some protection, as well as you may be newly exposed after age 26.
Sonia, thank you for the question. Dr. Pletcher, you mentioned pap smears as a way of detecting HPV in women. How often is it now recommended for those to be done?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's a great question. I would recommend doing a show on this because it's important to get a lot of education out there. The current recommendation is to start at age 21 for all women. And again, another change from a prior recommendation is that that's regardless of sexual activity. So certainly talking with a young woman, preparing her for that, because it does require a speculum exam, making sure she's comfortable with that is really important. And then getting it annually is generally recommended. And once you have some negative screen, so you've gotten it twice and it's been negative, delaying it another year, giving another 2 or 3 years between screens is okay as well. And again, your discussion with your healthcare provider, other risk factors may play into that schedule. But in general, start at 21, go annually, and if they're normal, you can sometimes defer a year or two.
So for people that have been listening to this conversation and who may be wondering how to get more information, how to make an informed decision about whether or not to have their children vaccinated for HPV, is there a particular place they can go to find out more or to just get as much information before they make a decision?
Yeah, that's right. I will usually recommend people go to the CDC, Center for Disease Control website, and there's just a plethora of information there. Since one of the prior callers, I'm looking up on some of the reports of adverse events, and you can get quite amount of information from that website. The American Academy of Pediatrics has a lot of information out there. Also, our Pennsylvania chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics has a wonderful vaccine information program that you can access through their website as well. And I'll give that to you in a few seconds.
Yeah, well, and we can put links to information at our website, which is WESA.FM. As always, you can go there to find information on topics that we discuss here on Essential Pittsburgh. Again, WESA.FM, and click on Essential Pittsburgh, and we will have links to information about, in this case, human papillomavirus or the HPV vaccine. And we've been talking about this with Dr. Jonathan Pletcher. He's the clinical director for the Division of Adolescent Medicine at Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. Dr. Pletcher, we've had a good discussion, lots of interesting calls and comments, and thank you for being with us to handle all of those.
Well, thank you.
Coming up, we will talk with a woman who is running the equivalent of a marathon a day for 5 days. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.